CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here are your hosts, Katie Conley and Jeff Sargent.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, Vancouver Council has approved the creation of 1,200 new social housing units.
The union representing BC's prison guards says overcrowding and staff shortages may have led to a recent escape.
And shoppers are packing the malls for the busiest shopping day of the year.
We'll have all this plus arts and your weekend weather forecast coming up in the next hour right here on News 101.
But first, William Sauder, a well-known BC philanthropist, former UBC chancellor, and a member of the university's Board of Governors, has died of a heart attack at the age of 81. Sauder made his fortune in the forest industry, founding International Forest Products and transforming his family-owned business of Sauder Industries into a prominent North American manufacturer and distributor of wood products. Sauder's $20 million donation to UBC School of Business 4 years ago meant that the school was renamed in Sauder's honor. To read the statement made by UBC President Stephen Toop and Dean of Sauder, Daniel Muzica, you can visit www.sauder.ubc.ca. Now with a look at other local news, we're joined in studio by our News 101 reporter, Carrie Baptist.
Vancouver City Council has unanimously approved the creation of 1,200 units of social and supportive housing, with the first six of those buildings to be completed by 2010. According to the Council's agenda, 12 sites in the city will be leased to nonprofit organizations to create housing spaces for not only Vancouver's homeless, but also those with addictions and residents of the city's single-room occupancy hotels. Mayor Sam Sullivan says that the Council's decision is a big step towards addressing the issue of homelessness in the greater Vancouver area, but that other municipalities need to come along and take up some of the slack as well. While Vancouver City proper is home to less than a third of the population of the Metro Vancouver region, it is also home to nearly two-thirds of the region's homeless, a burden that Sullivan believes should be shouldered in part by other cities.
Vancouver police have busted a telephone drug delivery service in Richmond, arresting seven people. This is just one of 30 so-called dial-a-dope operations in the city the VPD are tracking. Callers can order heroin, crack, or cocaine and have it delivered by these dial-a-dope services. The police also say they aren't going to extremes to shut down these operations. According to Corporal Nikki Basra, police callers set up deliveries for public places where they think the supplier wouldn't show up, like a mall or a park, and they were then surprised to discover the services would actually deliver anywhere.
In the Tri-Cities, a plan to have five churches act as overnight homeless shelters is already underway at one church in Port Coquitlam. Northside Foursquare Church has been welcoming about 13 homeless people a night since December 1st, providing a safe and secure bed for those who need it. According to the Tri-Cities Homelessness Task Group member Sandy Burpee, those who have been staying at the Northside Foursquare Church have found great food and a warm and safe atmosphere. Coquitlam City Council recently authorized three churches to participate in the program starting in January. Burpee says one church in Port Moody is waiting on a zoning charge before it will begin welcoming the homeless in February.
A few cases of the Norwalk virus in the Royal Columbian Hospital in New Westminster has led to the cancellation of several elective surgeries. 10 patients and 13 staff have been sickened by the illness, which will take a few days to recover from. For the time being, the Royal Columbian has closed the hospital to new admissions until symptoms have gone from the last patient, which may take a little while. Visitors are being urged not to come to the RCH unless it is absolutely necessary. The same virus has also forced the closure of a Burnaby daycare. The daycare, attached to Burnaby Secondary South, closed early yesterday and remained closed today because eight children and five young moms developed Norwalk-like symptoms. Burnaby South Secondary School was not affected and was open on Friday.
All right, we're now going to take a very quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you cared.
You!
Yes, Electro, and I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pit my power against your brains any day. What was that?
That, my thieving fiend, is the result of brains.
Use your brain. Turn off all the lights when you leave a room. If every household in BC turned off one light bulb for 4 hours a day for 1 year, it would save enough electricity to power all the homes in Mission for an entire year. This Power Smart play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is News 101, and the time is 5:14. Now, with a look at some provincial news, we're joined once again in studio by News 101 reporter Carrie Baptist.
The union representing BC prison guards says serious overcrowding and a shortage of guards may have played a role in a recent escape from the North Fraser Pretrial Center. Dean Purdy, with the BC Government and Service Employees Union, says the ratio of inmates to staff was never more than 20-1 before the BC Liberals closed 9 correctional centers in 2002. Now, that ratio can be as high as 60-1. Purdy says that the pretrial center houses at least 150 more inmates than it was designed for, and the guards are stressed, poorly paid, and working too much overtime. The union is proposing an emergency pay upgrade and the hiring of more guards. It also wants the province to reopen jails or build new ones. Solicitor General John Les is on holidays and not available for comment.
Transportation Minister Kevin Falcon says a decision on the long-awaited Evergreen Line will be made within the next month. Premier Gordon Campbell has already said the rapid transit line to the Tri-Cities will be built, but questions remain on the specifics of the project. There's still no word on who will cover a $400 million funding shortfall, but Falcon says he's been working with Ottawa to bring some federal dollars into the project. Falcon says the newly revamped TransLink now has more authority to raise its own money.
The ice jam causing flooding along the Nechako River in Prince George grew about a kilometer overnight and is now about 3 kilometers long. The growing ice jam caused river levels to rise more than a half a meter, and the cost of trying to clear it is already nearly $700,000. Today, crews continued to pump out water and put up berms to prevent further flooding. At least 17 homes and several businesses remain under evacuation order, while many others are still on evacuation alert. The ice jam first started to cause the river to overflow its banks on December 10th, prompting the city to declare a local state of emergency. Last week, the ice jam was more than 5 kilometers long, and more than 50 homes and businesses were evacuated.
The BC government is looking to take issue with the authors of a recent study claiming sea lice from BC fish farms could wipe out salmon runs, leading to eventual extinction of the regional species of pink salmon. The government-appointed Pacific Salmon Forum has stated the findings of the study, conducted by the Western Canada Wilderness Committee, are not consistent with their own research. According to the provincial forum, survival rates for pink salmon in the Broughton Archipelago are equal or better than the rates of survival in other coastal watersheds with no fish farms. The Western Canada Committee held a rally outside the provincial legislature, calling for the closure of all BC salmon farms as they see the risk to provincial salmon stocks as too great to continue.
BC Ferries is answering the call this holiday season with more than 120 extra sailings for festive travelers. Between now and January 6th, 100 extra trips will be made between Tsawwassen and Schwartz Bay, while 22 sailings will be added to the Horseshoe Bay Departure Bay route. If you need a specific sailing at a specific time, BC Ferries suggests making a reservation, particularly on Boxing Day and December 27th. To ease the pressure on the two busiest ferry routes, the company is offering special discounts on the Tsawwassen to Duke Point route. Foot passengers will be able to enjoy $5 savings per trip until January 6th, while drivers of under-height vehicles will save $15.
British Columbians are more likely to call police to keep the peace and quiet than other Canadians. This according to a recent Ipsos Reid study. The survey finds 61% of Canadians admit they would report their neighbors to the police for excessive noise. However, 69% of residents from this province say they would make the call. Household income appears to be a factor as well. 62% of respondents with household incomes of less than $55,000 per year have spoken to neighbors about their concerns, whereas those with household incomes of over $100,000 or more likely are more likely to call the police without banging on their neighbor's door first.
Shoppers are bracing themselves as they head for the malls today on what has been estimated to be the busiest shopping day of the year. One in five Canadians wait until the last moment to do their holiday shopping, which means December 22nd is expected to be the busiest day of the season. The numbers associated with the holiday shopping blitz are staggering. According to the credit and debit card transaction processor, Moneris, nearly 14,000 transactions will be processed per minute in Canada today, adding up to a grand total of 8.3 million by the time stores close tonight. These numbers represent an overall increase in the amount spent by Canadians this holiday season, with various studies suggesting our strong dollar, even stronger economy, and lower prices are the culprit for our newfound zest for holiday shopping. We're going to take another break now, but when we come back, we'll update you on national and international news. Stay with us. News 101 will continue right after this.
Hi, I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
Yo, yo, listen up. Are you a musician or a budding disco superstar at any level?
List yourself in, like, the musician directory on livemusicvancouver.com, and you can find gigs that are, like, totally cool people to jam with.
We've got some groovy listings sorted by instrument and playing level, so you can find just the cool cat you're looking for. Could be a teacher, someone to jam with, or a serious musical project.
Profiles linked to past and present show listings, and band rosters, too, so you can even check them out beforehand.
Choose from over 1,000 local musicians or list your own cool profile online easily and for free at livemusicvancouver.com.
And the news continues on CITR. The election race is on in four vacant federal ridings as Prime Minister Stephen Harper has announced by-elections will be held on March 17th. One of the ridings in question is Vancouver Quadra, which was left vacant after Liberal MP Stephen Owen resigned in July to take up his current post as UBC's Vice President of External and Community Relations. The Toronto Centre riding was left vacant after Liberal MP Bill Graham stepped down from his post in June. 2 days after Graham resigned, longtime MP Jim Peterson announced his retirement, leaving the Willowdale, Ontario riding vacant as well. The fourth by-election will be held in Saskatchewan's Desenthenay, Mississippi, Churchill River riding. Pardon me for the pronunciation. Former Ontario NDP Premier Bob Rae won the Liberal nomination in Toronto Centre in March. Martha Hall Findlay, a lawyer who finished as the last of eight candidates in the Liberal leadership race, was announced as a candidate in Willowdale in March. Vancouver Quadra has had both Conservatives and Liberals at the helm, but it has been Liberal territory since 1984. Now with more national news, here once again is Carrie Baptist.
The Prime Minister says Canadians will criticize the government for doing too much to tackle climate change once the economic impact is felt from reducing greenhouse gases. Stephen Harper has mentioned the, quote, challenge of implementing the first phases of the mandatory emission reduction targets on industry because of the costs on the economy. Harper says there's a reason why previous governments have avoided setting mandatory reduction targets. While he says the costs will be manageable, they will provoke some reaction, and he's ready for the criticisms. Harper says he's already starting to hear the first cries from industry and the provinces about the upcoming emissions targets.
Help has arrived for a sailor aboard a disabled boat drifting in the Atlantic Ocean. A U.S. Coast Guard cutter reached Jean-Raymond Colon and his sailboat Grail Pilgrim this morning. At last word, U.S. Coast Guard spokesperson says that both Colon and a Coast Guard cutter are circling and waiting for the weather to subside so they can safely transfer the stranded sailor. Both the Grail Pilgrim and the cutter Tahoma are being tossed around the 5-meter-high swells. The sailboat appears to be safe for Colon, who is tired and hungry but in good spirits. Colon was on his way to Bermuda from Halifax when his engine failed about 400 kilometers east of Cape Cod. He called the Rescue Coordination Center in Halifax, which notified the U.S. Coast Guard in Boston.
Canada Post is warning the public about some fake job ads that appeared in the Vancouver Sun on November 24th and later in the Calgary Sun, the Halifax Daily News, and the Kamloops Daily News. The ads seem to have been an attempt to entice people to provide personal data, including bank account information. These bogus ads had claimed the Crown Corporation was looking for people to evaluate their customer service. One of those ads had appeared in the Sun, written in plain text with no logo. A phone number with a Montreal area code appeared at the bottom. Canada Post spokesperson Lillian Au says that when applicants called, they would speak to someone who had faxed them a fake application form. Canada Post never asked for banking information on a job application, and there is now a disclaimer on all the corporation's legitimate job postings stating that. The Crown Corporation did receive a few complaints about the fake ads, but Au said she was not aware of anyone who was actually defrauded as a result of them.
Police in Quebec are investigating 5 persons of interest in the disappearance of a Trois-Rivières girl almost 5 months ago. Cédrica Provencher disappeared July 31st from her neighborhood about 140 kilometers northeast of Montreal after reportedly helping a man looking for a lost dog. A provincial police spokesperson says all 5 have knowledge of the region and could have been near or in the Trois-Rivières neighborhood at the time Cédrica disappeared. Some 1,200 police officers have been involved in the investigation, with more than 800 cars checked and 2,600 people questioned. 6 investigators are still on the case. The news has given some hope to members of the girl's family, who have worked tirelessly selling T-shirts and coffee mugs to raise money for their continued search.
An elementary school in Ottawa has been flooded with hateful and threatening messages after reports it had removed the word Christmas from a song performed at its Christmas concert. The choir at Elmdale Public School did not sing its controversial version of the song Silver Bells at its closed-door concert Thursday after receiving dozens of angry responses, including some containing foul language. Lynn Scott, chair of the Ottawa-Carleton School Board, says that some callers accused the school of being anti-Christian, and even some threatened teachers and officials at the school. Teachers had originally intended to replace, quote, Christmas time and other Christmas references from the original 1951 lyrics with words referring to a festive time. When news of the plan reached the media, some radio call-in shows and blogs encouraged people to contact school and protest. Scott says the unfortunate reaction has put a damper on what should have been a delightful Christmas celebration for the children.
New American legislation passed yesterday means Canadians won't need to pack their passports when entering the U.S. by car until June of 2009. The legislation was written into a budget bill by Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, whose office says they will be working to extend it beyond that date. Originally, the mandatory passport requirement was to kick in at all Canada-U.S. land and sea borders this coming summer. Canada, however, has long said that deadline is too early. Canadians flying to the U.S. have had to carry a passport since January, creating long lineups at passport offices and headaches for travelers rushing to obtain their passports in time. Leahy says mandatory passport legislation was rushed to the border before necessary technology, infrastructure, and training were in place to enforce it. The province, meanwhile, is considering creating an enhanced driver's license to substitute for a passport for British Columbians crossing the border. Beginning in 2008, a pilot program with 500 volunteers will be testing the new identification cards.
2 significant earthquakes rocked the Aleutian Islands off the coast of Alaska last night. At 9:23 p.m. local time, 2 earthquakes, magnitude 5.9 and 6.1 on the Richter scale, struck approximately 1 minute apart. Fortunately, there were no immediate reports of damage or injuries to people in the region, and no tsunami warnings were listed for Alaska or the northwest coast of British Columbia. Last night's tremors followed another magnitude 7.1 earthquake recorded on Tuesday. The Aleutian Islands, a chain of more than 300 islands extending southwestward off the coast of Alaska in the North Pacific Ocean and are an incredibly seismically active area, experiencing more earthquakes than the other 49 U.S. states combined.
And in international news, the European Union's passport free zone has now grown to include 9 formerly communist countries. The EU citizens traveling through the area will no longer need passports to cross land and sea borders from Estonia all the way to Portugal. Danuta Eiler reports from Warsaw for Free Speech Radio News.
Passport-free Schengen zone has just expanded to include 9 mostly former communist states. As a result, EU citizens traveling around the bloc will not need a passport to cross land and sea borders in an area about one-third of the size of the United States, from Estonia to Portugal. Optimists call it the end of the Iron Curtain. Pessimists, who refer to it as Fortress Europe, fear a wave of immigration from non-EU countries where people will have to obtain so-called Schengen visas starting today. FSRN's Danuta Eisler reports from Warsaw.
As of today, Poland's eastern border has become EU's external boundary, which means that this country had to tighten its borders with Ukraine, Belarus and Russia. Simultaneously, traveling from Poland west and southwards has become trouble-free. Dropping bothersome checking procedures at internal EU crossings on the Polish border does not mean getting rid of effective control of who and what is entering or leaving Poland. On the contrary, Polish police, border guard and customs services will have access to Schengen information system with database with information on smugglers, criminals and even terrorist suspects to make their efforts more productive. Polish officials say border guards in this country are well prepared to face their new tasks. Minister of Administration and Internal Affairs Grzegorz Schetyna.
This is a huge obligation for us to make so-called old Europe feel safe now. We are undertaking the duty of monitoring and securing this border as of today.
Poles welcomed the decision, pointing to the ease of traveling, while analysts also suggested potential boost in business and trade cooperation. However, outside the EU, especially in Ukraine, Belarus and Russia, people fear that what's already been dubbed a Fortress Europe will now be created, where travel will be more difficult. Tadeusz Iwański works in the Ukrainian section of Polish Radio.
For Ukrainians, it would mean the problems because they will have to pay for the visas. But on the political level, greeting Poland, of course, but on the cultural level, many of Ukrainian intellectuals, they are thinking of it as deepening the division in Europe.
Some in Western Europe also fear rise in crime or that the EU's new external borders with former Soviet republics will be less secure against illegal immigration. Dmitry Hurniewicz, a Belarusian journalist working in Poland, says that such reasoning is unjust, as Belarusians feel to be Europeans.
I don't understand this step of European Union because, as I know, the Schengen visa is for illegal immigrants from Asia, but Belarus, it's Europe. And the price of this Schengen visa is very, very big. 60 euros, it's just impossible for Belarusian to pay this money because their monthly salary is about 100 euros. For me, the dialogue between Europe and Belarus finishes at this moment.
According to the recent data, immigration of former Soviet republics nationals to Poland is low, but growing in size and importance. This country also receives few asylum seekers and many, most of them Chechens, transit through Poland on their way to Western Europe. Justyna Frelak, a coordinator of Migration and Eastern Policy Program at Warsaw's Institute of Public Affairs, says that contrary to common misperceptions, Poland should not expect influx of immigrants from the East now for one simple reason.
They are not going to settle down here, but go to Belgium or England because Poland cannot actually offer them a good living. So we don't have to care about them because they will go anyway. Especially that 90% is from Chechnya. There are victims of conflicts in Russia, in Caucasus, and they are a really, really difficult group for any state.
The Schengen Zone Agreement was named for the town in Luxembourg, where the Open Border Agreement was signed in 1985. Up to today, it has already included 15 signatories, the oldest EU nations, minus Britain and Ireland, plus the non-bloc nations, Norway and Iceland. I'm Danuta Isler, Free Speech Radio News, Warsaw.
And many North Korean refugees now living in South Korea continue to face challenges such as poverty and job discrimination. FSRN's Jason Strother reports.
Many North Koreans flee their homeland to escape poverty, famine, or government persecution. But for the ones who reach South Korea, they quickly encounter a new set of challenges. The majority of defectors continue to live in poverty, and some say they face job discrimination. From Gimpo City, FSRN's Jason Strother tells us how many of these refugees are now relying on each other to get by in their new home.
A giant mixer spits out long strands of buckwheat noodles. They're the main ingredient of a dish called naengmyeon, which is served in an icy cold soup. Naengmyeon is a popular meal from North Korea, and the workers here at the Paektu Food Factory know something about that. Most of the 21 employees are North Korean refugees. 42-year-old Won Young-jin is a former North Korean soldier. He's been living in South Korea for about 2 years and is now the floor manager at the factory. He says if it weren't for Paektu, he might not have been able to earn a living. In North Korea, we had good and often difficult jobs, Won says. But here, the work South Koreans give us is too simple. That's why I like working here with other North Koreans. It's too difficult to work with South Koreans. Won believes that South Koreans discriminate against refugees from the North, making it more difficult to adjust to life below the 38th parallel. He's not the only one who thinks that way. Hu Hong-il, who defected from the North in 1993, began the advocacy group North Korean Refugees Preparing for Unification. He's also the owner of the Paektu Food Factory, and he says up to 70% of the 11,000 defectors who now call South Korea home are unemployed or live in poverty.
There are huge differences, even a language barrier. Even though we are the same people, we have a difficult time adjusting to the capitalist way of life. Even elites from North Korea cannot get good jobs here because of these obstacles.
Hu says that North Koreans who held professional jobs back home lack the knowledge to compete with South Koreans. He says most refugees have no choice but to accept so-called 3D jobs, dirty, difficult, and dangerous, work that South Koreans don't want. Hu points to the South Korean government for some of the blame. He says despite the steadily increasing number of North Koreans seeking refuge in the South, Seoul hasn't done enough to help them fit in.
We've made several recommendations to the government, but it's produced no results. I think it's because the current administration does not want to fix the problem. They regard assisting refugees as an obstacle to better relations with North Korea.
Two-thirds of North Korean refugees living in the South are women. Often, they make the journey to freedom alone or lose their husbands or other family members along the way. Many lack the skills or education to make it on their own. Kang Soo-jin escaped to South Korea 5 years ago. She's the president of a support group that specifically helps other female defectors.
Younger women do find it easier to learn new things or find work, but women in their 30s or 40s have a hard time. We offer them computer training and help them get jobs.
Back at the Paektu factory, CEO Lee Chun-sam is standing in a warehouse surrounded by boxes of tree roots and other ingredients for naengmyeon. I want to enlarge the company because I care about other North Korean refugees like myself, Lee says. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Jason Strother in Gimpo City, South Korea.
And thanks to Free Speech Radio News for making that piece available for rebroadcast. All right, it's time now for another break, but stay tuned for much more coming up on the other side.
Hi, I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies, WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
Hi everyone, we're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy!
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com. Or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety. Or you can even join our Facebook group.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to News 101. Well, it's that time again for our oddity of the week. And this week, Jeff, you have the story of an unconventional snow removal service.
Yeah, Katie, I guess you could say that. Well, we have a Quebec man who has taken an entrepreneurial approach to clearing the snow from his property. He's selling it on eBay. Michel Levesque says the sale started as a joke but turned into an innovative way to raise money for charity. Bids for the snowbank have reached just over $1,000, which Levesque plans to donate to a Montreal youth group. Levesque's snowbank in his yard just north of Montreal measures more than 2 meters high. He says it also comes with 58 square meters of surrounding snow, but adds the quality may vary by the time the winning bid picks up the snowbank next month. Okay. The Montreal area was hit hard by snowstorms earlier this week, as you might recall, and work crews have struggled to clear the streets.
So I'm guessing Levesque is going to somehow package this snowbank and give it to the highest bidder. How do you think he's going to move this?
I don't know. See, this is the big question, and this we don't know. I mean, to transport frozen goods, I mean, you need a refrigeration vehicle of some sort.
Yeah.
And that's not terribly cheap. You know, I mean, that's an expensive outtake to actually do that.
That is. And if it's all the snow he's talking about, 58 square meters and a very 2 meter high snowbank, that's going to take a very big refrigeration truck to ship.
Now, it is a great idea, obviously, for charity. You know, that's great. But who in their right mind would purchase a bank of snow? I would assume they're doing it as a joke as well. You know, they're just donating the money. I mean, if it was me, I'd just rather give the money to whatever charity and just say, keep the snow. Thank you very much. I don't need the snow.
Maybe there's people in other parts of the country, namely BC, who just really wanted a white Christmas. So.
Maybe. Don't you think it would cost a lot more to transport that? Imagine hiring a private truck to ship it all the way, you know, 4,000 kilometers or more out to Vancouver, say.
Well, I know some of the shipping costs, even for just large packages with Canada Post, are kind of unfriendly. So I can't imagine how much it would cost.
Imagine getting an 18-wheeler to do this.
Oh, man.
That's a bit much. But interesting story. Very interesting way to get rid of your snow. You know, if we ever get a good dump here, maybe I should try and consider that too.
Very original, Michel Levesque in Quebec. Thank you very much for giving us that wonderful story. All right, it's break time again, but coming up next, we're going to have your weekly arts listings. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Are you a UBC student taking first year economics, math, chemistry, or physics?
That stuff is hard.
Are you feeling like you need some tutoring? That's okay, because the AMS offers free and appointment tutoring for students in these subjects.
Whoa! How does it work?
It's on a first-come, first-served basis, and there's no need to sign up. Just show up with your books and your questions.
Whoa! When does it happen?
Monday to Thursday from 3 to 7 at the Sub Pacific Spirit Cafeteria, located beside the Starbucks.
Whoa! A+, here I come.
BCSportsBeat.ca is your source on the internet dedicated to providing you with information on professional and amateur sports in your province. You'll find game scores, team updates, and the perspective of the athletes through in-depth interviews, all at BCSportsBeat.ca. BCSportsBeat.ca, your source for BC sports.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Katie Comley alongside Jeff Sargent, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Right now it is 5:43, and it's time to take a look at this week's arts listings. Now, arts director Katie Fitzpatrick is away this week, so Katie and I will do our very best to try and fill in for her.
Okay. Currently in theaters, there's two very popular shows going on through the Arts Club. The first is Disney's Beauty and the Beast, brought back from last year to huge popularity. The stage version of this Oscar-winning animated musical with music by Alan Menken, lyrics by Howard Ashman and Tim Rice, and the book by Linda Wolverton. Bill Miller directs, Steve Maddock as the Beast, and Amy Wallace as Belle. And that's showing at the Stanley Theater till January 6th, 2008. Also showing through the Arts Club, but showing at the Granville Island stage, is the much-hailed stage adaptation of the Christmas classic It's a Wonderful Life. Now, personally, I went to see this on Tuesday, and I can tell you I was extremely pleased. It was great for people of all ages, and even if you do love the movie and are afraid of how it will translate from film to stage, it was excellent. I recommend you go see it now.
Right now?
Right now.
Okay. Well, there's also lots to look forward to in music as we roll into the new year. First up, there's Marc D'Anjou. The organist from the Quebec City Cathedral Basilica performs works on Christmas themes by Danquin, Gigou, and Bédard, as well as works by Vierne, Frank, and Mulet. Hopefully I didn't butcher too many of those. That's on December 30th this year at 7:15 p.m. That's at Holy Rosary Cathedral at the corner of Richards and Dunsmuir. Also coming soon is Kyra Folk Farber. The Canadian soprano sings music by Debussy, Zemlinsky, Brahms, and Bellini, with accompanist by pianist Kinza Tyrell. That's coming up on January 2nd, 2008 at 7:30 p.m. at the Norman Rothstein Theatre, 950 West 41st Avenue. Now, finally in music, there's Baroque by Request. Alain Trudel leads the CBC Radio Orchestra with soloist Roger Cole and Mayumi, Sealer, in a concert of audience favorites. That's January 6th at 3 p.m. And that's at the Chan Center for the Performing Arts right here at UBC.
A holiday event coming up in the literary world is the New Year's Eve with the Vancouver Poetry Slam, with performances by C.R. Avery and the Boom Chasers, plus an open cash slam with $150 in prizes. That's December 31st, 2007 at 7 p.m. at Café du Soleil on Commercial Drive. And finally, if you're interested in comedy, you may want to check out the Vancouver Theatre Sports League, what they're currently showing. It's called The 24th, Christmas Eve of Destruction, and mocks both Christmas and the TV show 24. As usual with the Theatre Sports League, they promise lots of surprises with audience interaction. That's showing at the New Review stage on Granville Island until December 29th. In film, there's a few new ones out at the Fifth Avenue Cinemas that you may want to check out. Those are Juno, The Savages, The Diving Bell, and The Butterfly. Finally, let us tell you about a few events that are coming up that you may want to keep an eye out for.
Firstly, it's the Vancouver premiere, the exclusive first run of Kurt Cobain, About a Son. It's directed by A.J. Schnack, with the voice of Kurt Cobain actually used throughout. That runs January 3rd to 9th, 2008, at Pacific Cinematheque. That's 1131 Howe Street in Vancouver. It's a deeply affecting, hauntingly beautiful, a true surprise. So it's called Imagine Late Nirvana frontman Kurt Cobain's filmic autobiography rendered in the poetic mode of Terrence Malick, or as a Pacific Northwest Koyaanisqatsi. And you'll have some idea of the unorthodox approach of this extraordinary impressionistic documentary.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
And The Boyfriend rings in the new year. Studio 58 alumnus Dean Paul Gibson directs the classic musical. Studio 58 is proudly presenting the Roaring 1920s musical on stage from January 31st to February 24th. The musical romance is set in Madame Dubonnet's fashionable finishing school on the sun-kissed French Riviera, where young ladies are schooled in the art of marrying well. With its catchy tunes, period dances, including the Charleston, and its winning sense of humor, The Boyfriend is a sparkling, tongue-in-cheek musical romp.
Not fashion, not fat, right?
Yeah, okay. Not fat.
Very good. Okay. The Italian Girl in Algiers. It's the first Vancouver opera production of Rossini's madcap comedy since 1965. Well, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. It's an uproarious comedy, marvelous music, and wildly colorful sets and costumes. They all combine for a hugely entertaining evening that's as bracing as a bobsled ride in Vancouver Opera's production of Rossini's The Italian Girl in Algiers. That runs January 26th to February 2nd, 2008 at the Queen E Theatre.
The Black Rider, the casting of Magic Bullets, is by Tom Waits, Robert Wilson, and William S. Burroughs. Runs from January 16th to February 9th, 2008, and it's part of the Push Festival launch and media opening as a Push Festival for the Performing Arts at the Granville Island Stage. And we're going to end off arts there, and we're going to go to our resident meteorologist, Selena Ferris, for a look at your weekend weather. Selena?
Storms rolling in off the coast will bring another cold and wet weekend. Saturday and Sunday, we'll see periods of rain with flurries at higher elevations. The highs will be 5 degrees on Saturday and 6 degrees on Sunday. Monday, we'll see a break in from the rain, but it will be back for the rest of the week. That's your weekend weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
All right, thank you very much, Selena. That is our program for today. Friday, December 21st. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, just give us a call. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can always email news@citr.ca.
Jeff Sargent produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday. Well, actually, not this Monday. You can join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. And for the entire news team here at CATR, I'm Katie Conley.
And I am Jeff Sargent. Thank you very much for listening. And everyone have a very happy holiday season. We will see you next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up next, I'll be here with the sports, and we're going to replay a basketball game from the end of November featuring the women's Thunderbirds team. Stay tuned. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.